A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
The Other Hand is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Other Hand. I want to start off today by a quick run through on some developments in Ireland over the last few days. We got the unemployment rate for February down to 4.2% from 4.5% in January. So the labour market continues to strengthen. And, you know, despite all of the global and indeed domestic headwinds over the last 12 months, the unemployment rate has just increased by 0.1 over that period. So very, very strong labour market, 119,300 people unemployed. And the youth unemployment rate has fallen from 11.7 in January to 10.5% in February. So that's the ongoing story of the amazing job creation mechanics at play in the Irish economy at the moment. The end of February, we got the Exchequer returns. A deficit of 0.1 billion was recorded in the first 2 months of the year, down from a deficit of 2.5 billion last year. The tax take continues to be very strong. Overall tax in at 12 billion. That's 630 million or 5.5% up on the same period last year. Income tax, 5.3 billion, up 287 million or 5.7% on last year. VAT up 196 million to 4.3 billion. That's a growth rate of 4.8%. Corporation tax was down 63 million, but January and February aren't corporation tax payment months, so that's pretty irrelevant. The other big tax item this time actually was excise duty. Came in at 957 million, up 150 million, growth of 18.6%. So I guess the key point there is, Chris, that the elements of taxation that are domestically generated in the main, income tax, VAT, excise duty, growing strongly. Corporation tax, we've said many times, is going to be the one to watch this year to see what sort of trends we might get. And, you know, if you remember back in August to October of last year, we saw a weakening of the corporation tax take and then recovered strongly in November. So it will be interesting to see how it evolves over the coming months. And I guess it's the one that I'll be watching most closely. But the income tax piece is just incredibly strong. And that feeds into the labour market data I just spoke about.
Jim, it's March. And so, as you say, we've just got 2 months data, which are always important. But the big data months for the Exchequer for government finances are yet to come. We do have another budget before the next general election. Is that a fair thing to say?
In theory, we do. Yeah, budget in October. General election is due by the end of March of 2025.
So it's not certain, but it's probably the case that we have Minister McGrath will deliver one more budget, the finance minister. And we're in March, and so we've probably got, what, 6-7 months now to the budget?
Yeah.
And, what, 11 months or so, maybe 10 months to the next general election?
Yeah.
So we're now going to be in a pre-election and pre-budget frenzy for the next 6 months, basically. Is that right?
That's correct. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, European and locals in June start the process.
So what's going to be in the budget? I mean, I'm not asking you that today. God, no. But I suspect we're going to be asking that question even earlier than we did last year, for example. That segues nicely into this week's UK budget, which was a bit of a nothing burger, to be honest, which was astonishing in itself, because that definitely was a pre-election budget. And you would have thought that if there was anything, any country that was going to do the pre-election bribe to the electorate, it was going to be Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak and the British Tories, but they didn't do it. Now, one explanation is that they simply couldn't do it because they just, unlike Ireland, they ain't got the money. And the borrowing requirement is so high already, et cetera, that they just haven't got the money to bribe the electorate with. But to the extent that they did do something, it was really, really interesting. Because for once, they did the right thing. Now, can you imagine, Jim? Here am I saying that about the British Tory government. And they cut the British equivalent of PRSI or USC, or we call it national insurance here. And that benefits workers. It doesn't benefit pensioners. So the group that votes for the Tories the most, pensioners, were actually harmed in this budget financially. And it was absolutely right. And there's a feeling that the government recognises the intergenerational bargain has shifted in favour of pensioners over workers, and that there's something called the triple lock here in the UK, which means that pensioners' state pension is goes up by a silly amount a lot of years, not every year, and that the government has recognised that the balance needs to shift from the old to the young. And I can't remember the last time I said this, Jim, but the Tories did something sensible. They cut national insurance rather than cutting income tax. So I'm just gonna leave that there, Jim. I've said something I never thought I'd say, which is that Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt did something reasonably sensible.
Yes, I welcome that, Chris. In relation to the Irish budget, I know it's way too early to start talking about it because we've no idea what the tax take is going to look like. But the trends so far would suggest that come October, the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform will be in a position to deliver a plus 14 billion budget package, very similar to last year. I think that's what they're aiming for. And I think they will sort of say to the electorate, assuming the election hasn't happened at that stage, that, listen, we are making progress. You know, we are bringing down taxes. We are trying to put more money into people's pockets. So give us more time and we'll continue to do this. I think that's going to be the main platform. Of course, that's all well and good, but the big issues will be housing, health and immigration. So they're issues they're going to have to address in a meaningful way in a general policy context. But certainly at this stage, it would appear that we are teed up for another pretty generous budget come October. As I say, one of the key things to look at there will be the corporation tax take once we come into the corporation tax payment months.
One of the things that did emerge this week, which always does in the UK, is the idea that the budgetary process generates short-term thinking and doesn't do anything remotely enough by way of strategic, longer-term thinking, and that the whole short-term budget process needs to be scrapped and it's become a circus, and that there should be a strategic fiscal setting process, and this setting tax rates and welfare rates and spending for the next 10 minutes really should stop. And I think those comments apply to Ireland as well, that I think the annual budget should be scrapped, or at least the circus around it scrapped. And it should be more of a continuing, ongoing strategic plan that is set periodically and then subject to revision and examination as events blow you off course or whatever. But the idea that you have this set piece thing, which is very similar in the UK and Ireland, I think generates a lot of short-termism and a lot of volatility in policy making that is economically damaging. And I think I've said this before, I'm actually arguing against our own income stream here, Jim, because we always do an awful lot of work around the budget, lots of speeches, lots of talks, lots of seminars, lots of webinars, lots of writing. But I think that that's all part of the circus, to be honest. And although we are grateful for the work, in many ways, we wish we didn't need to do it. Is that fair?
Yeah, that is fair. Budget week is my best week of the year. But having said that, in policymaking generally, I would much prefer to see a much more longer term strategic approach to the management of the public finances, where money is going to be directed. And we've seen this in housing, particularly where there is no semblance really of setting a target or plan where you want to see housing 10 or 20 years down the road, and you build all policy towards that. Housing really policy is very, very reactive and reactionary. And I don't like that. It does give rise to populism. And I think you can say the same thing generally about the whole budgetary process. So no, I agree with you. And we've argued this, I think, for a long, long time. But listen, it's not going to change. The politics of the annual budget dictate that it will remain the case. Chris, I wanted to talk a bit about some big companies here that announced profit results over the last week. And listen, I am, you know me ideologically, I certainly wouldn't be anti-profit. Okay, I think it's good to see companies generating profits, because you know that's what gives rise to the ability to reinvest in businesses and so on. So profitability is obviously absolutely essential.
So are you starting the profit before people party?
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is what makes me nervous, Chris, okay? Believe me.
Well, if I'm giving you a pile on, imagine what some the lulas out there are going to do now.
Okay, can I just take you through three companies first? AIB announced net profits of just over $2 billion. Colin Hunt, the CEO, described it as the best financial performance ever by AIB in its history, up 169%. And within that, net interest income increased by 83.3%. And I want to get back to net interest income in a second. Okay, up 83.3%. Bank of Ireland last week announced profits of just over $2 billion. Net interest income up by 48.3%. And PTSB, the third player in the Irish banking market at this stage, profits of 166 million, net interest income up 71%. Okay, and before I talk about that net interest income piece, the other thing I would like to say is that AIB said that it now controls 33% of the mortgage market, Bank of Ireland 41%, and PTSB 19%. So three institutions control just over 93% of the mortgage market here. So what that's suggesting is, you know, is this monopoly or is it oligopoly? I think it's a...
Well, that's semantics, Jim, but it's
semantics, but yeah.
And whether you're making widgets or making financial products like mortgages, if you've got those kinds of profits, the drivers of which are profit margins, and the only thing that really drives profit margins in this particular case, there are lots of drivers of profit margins, but the key driver of these profit margins are competition, or really the absence. And I think that's what you're getting at. So, let's call it monopolistic profits.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the three institutions I covered there have grown their profits enormously on the back of rising interest rates, the net interest income, very, very strong. And the net interest income is basically the difference between what they charge on lending, what they earn from lending, and what they pay depositors. And of course, they will argue that one of the reasons why net interest income is up is because, you know, lending has grown quite strongly in overall terms. But still, you know, you're seeing the banks generate massive profits, while at the same time, businesses and consumers have been struggling with the interest rate rises we've seen over the last couple of years.
Every great lie comes wrapped around a kernel of truth. And the kernel of truth in what the banks are saying is that, yes, lending has increased. So when lending increases, if you're making a positive profit margin on the lending, you will make more money, which is absolutely true. But the bigger truth, which actually reveals all that nonsense to be a bit of a lie, is that banks always, always make money during changing interest rates environments. When interest rates are changed by central banks, banks can always hide increases in profit margins. And as you say, what they do is they charge a little bit less than they need to or that they should do on savings, the amount of money that they have deposit with them, and they put their prices up. It's old-fashioned price gouging. So if this was a market trader selling you apples, it's because the cost of their apples have gone down because the farmers are getting less money, but they're putting their prices up to you, the person buying the apples. It's the same with money. It's no difference in principle at all. They're hiding massive profit margin increases behind the volatility of interest rates. And it helps enormously, of course, that interest rates are now positive. They found it difficult to make money or make as much money when interest rates were zero. So that they are making money. They're making too much money. But Jim, I got a question for you. If they're making so much money behind massively inflated monopolistic profit margins, why aren't their share prices going through the roof?
That is a good question. They have staged somewhat of a recovery, but I think one of the reasons now is we are starting to, and I think this was particularly the reaction to Bank of Ireland's results last week, we're starting to look at the spectre of interest rates moving in the opposite direction. And, you know, that might squeeze the net interest income of the banks. So there is that, the change in interest rates. And I want to talk about the ECB in a second. I guess the other thing, there is this legacy lack of faith in the Irish banks, given what happened back in 2009, 2010. So I think a lot of investors who lost a fortune on the bank shares back in the day have sort of decided never again, you know, regardless of the fundamentals of those institutions. So I think it's a combination of those factors, but also both AIB and Bank of Ireland and indeed PTSB are much smaller institutions. They're much narrower institutions than they were when we worked in Bank of Ireland, for example, where there was operations in the States, there was big operations in the UK, and indeed here in the Irish market. And other bits and pieces of international business, they're much, much narrower focus now. So they just don't look as sexy for investors today as they did back in the day. Is there any other explanation I'm missing? I'm not an equity analyst.
No, I think you put it very, very well, and I don't think you've missed anything out. The only other logical possibility is that they are, as they say in the trade, the wrong price, that they're mispriced share prices. And if they are too low, then that represents an opportunity. I don't know. I wouldn't make that argument myself. I think you put it very well. They've essentially become narrow mortgage banks with a few ancillary businesses tacked on. That makes them very dull and very uninteresting to investors. It means that they have a huge exposure to the Irish housing market. And there may be a feeling amongst international investors, at least, that the Irish housing market has traditionally gotten itself into trouble in the past and will do so again because of the elevated levels that we are at now. And I think the cyclicality of mortgage-type earnings is a worry for investors. So I just don't think people, when you buy an Irish bank, when you buy shares in Irish banks, you're essentially exposing yourself to the vagaries of the Irish mortgage market and therefore to the vagaries of Irish house prices. That, when you look through all of this, is what you're doing. And the ability of the banks to rip off mortgage holders and savers in Ireland. And there's a limit, I think, even in Ireland, about the extent to which these companies can rip people off, either the regulator or indeed, as we suggested in our last podcast, competition could be found somehow to erode these profit margins. So, yeah, they could be the wrong price. They might go up at some point. But this one-man investor will not be buying Irish bank shares.
Sorry, there was one other element, actually, that may be influential at the moment, and that is what's happening in the commercial property market here and the bank's exposure to that. So I think that's probably something else that is engendering a little bit of caution.
Could they be worried? Could markets be worried that Sinn Féin, if they come in and see these bank profits, will see this as an opportunity to put bank levies up again?
Yes, of course.
It's a logical possibility.
Absolutely. I'd say there's a lot of factors, actually. That is another one, you know, that there is no doubt about it. Sinn Féin would be looking at these profits and thinking, it's time to do something about it. But anyway, I didn't think I'd ever hear myself making these sorts of arguments. But anyway, there I go. The European Central Bank had its monthly interest rate meeting yesterday. Christine Lagarde came out and said that inflation is easing faster than it had expected a few months ago. Wow. And economic projections are a little bit lower. And she said that some price pressures remain strong due to strong growth in wages. I don't see that across Europe, to be honest. But anyway, that is European Central Bank speak for saying we are going to cut interest rates, but not just yet. But I think the trigger will be pulled from June onwards, if not before. But I think June onwards is the safest assumption to make. So European interest rates on the brink of turning down, I believe. Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, was speaking overnight, and he basically said that the Federal Reserve was now basically becoming more psychologically comfortable with the notion that it's time to start cutting interest rates. So that was a pretty bullish signal from Jay Powell. But as you know, watching the various members of the Federal Reserve, they all tend to say different things. We could get a totally comment at variance with that from another member in the next day or two.
You might even get it from Powell himself.
You might just, exactly. That's the point. But I suppose the underlying point is that the US interest rate cycle also likely to move down in the second half of the year. The other corporate results story that captured my attention in the last few days was the Electricity Supply Board, the ESB, made profits of $868 million, up dramatically on the previous year. And you question that. If you look at how businesses and consumers have been struggling with energy prices over the last couple of years, we have constantly on this podcast, and lots of others have too, spoken about the fact that, you know, the electricity suppliers are very slow to pass the price cuts onto their customers, despite what's happening on wholesale electricity price markets. And they have come back and argued, well, we hedge, we buy forward and so on. So it takes time to feed these through. But the chief executive of the ESB yesterday came out and said that, you know, there are two parts of the ESB business. There's the generation of electricity and there is the supply of electricity. And he was saying that most of the profits they're making is on the generation side, and that due to regulatory constraints, they are not allowed to subsidize one part of their business from profits generated in the other part of the business. I have no idea if that's true or not, but that's what the CEO has said. There was a European price study published in the last couple of days, showing, I think, Ireland has the second highest electricity prices in the European Union. So here again, we have a company with strong position in the electricity market here, making massive profits, while the consumers and the business customers of those companies, you know, continue to struggle with high energy costs. And if you look at the whole debate around the SME sector here, there's many factors at play. And I want to talk about all of those factors in a podcast coming up shortly, Chris, because I think it's important. But energy is one of the price pressures that you keep hearing about from SMEs particularly. So, you know, here we are, another situation where a company is benefiting enormously from factors that are totally outside of its control externally.
Yeah, the regulators don't seem to be able to sort this one out in many different jurisdictions, including here in the UK, to be honest. But I do think that these profits should at least be taxed. The windfall profits should always be taxed. This is going to be a very unpopular point I'm about to make. But in America, if you win the lottery, it's deemed to be a windfall and it's taxed. And that's the right thing from a principle of taxation's point of view, is that windfalls should be taxed. And this is the unpopular bit. You know, if you win the lottery in Ireland or the UK, you should be taxed on your winnings, in my opinion. You're not, because we don't do taxation properly here. And similarly, if you make windfall profits in banking or energy or whatever, they should be taxed. But we don't have the necessary regulatory frameworks to deal with this world in which we are all ripped off. And in many ways, it's a winner-takes-all world. And that brings me on to the point that I wanted to make briefly about the way in which stock markets are telling us that it's a winner-takes-all world. Almost. Because stock markets are globally at an all-time high. If you think about that, Jim, that's an extraordinary statement to make when you have war in Europe, war in the Middle East, the prospect of Donald Trump becoming president, the prospect of Liz Truss, I'm saying this with my fingers crossed here, making a comeback. That's a very small, very British point. Across the world, geopolitical tensions are on the rise all the time, and it seems that the world is more risky than it has been for a very long time. And yet, the markets that are supposed to price risk properly are saying that everything is fine. So what's going on? Equity markets, as I've already observed, in many cases are at or near all-time highs. Bond markets are very stable, nothing much going on. We've even got the phenomena whereby interest rate expectations are getting worse again, in the sense that all the interest rate cuts that we were very excited about are getting pushed further and further away in time, and we're not expecting as many cuts this year as we did in the past. Markets have sailed through that. If you'd forecast at the beginning of the year that interest rate markets would become more pessimistic, then you'd have become quite pessimistic about for all asset markets, actually. So there's a lot going on, and I think I see Jim waving at me, so I'm going to stop talking about markets there, but promise that we will talk a lot more about them next week.
Okay, I think we'll call it there, Chris. We're out of time. There's a lot we need to talk about in relation to equity markets, because there's a lot going on at the moment, and I know you have been dying over the last couple of podcasts to do that. So I think our first podcast next week will just focus in strongly on what's happening on global equity markets, and indeed on cryptocurrency, because there's a lot going on. So listen, Chris, cheers, Jim. It was great to talk again. See you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.